Good afternoon and thanks for joining us. We're here today with John MacArthur, who is a farmer and managing director of MacArthur BDC, who design, build and maintain crop drying, storage and processing systems for farmers across Great Britain and Ireland. They help farmers enhance profitability, sustainability and resilience by adding value to crops, including producing value-added animal feeds with environmental benefits, which takes us nicely into talking about the NCS project, or the Nitrogen Efficient Plants for Climate Smart Arable Cropping Systems project, for anybody who isn't aware of it. But I don't think there will be that many at this point. John leads the work package 4 of the NCS project. So John, can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in the NCS project and why you decided to get involved in the first place?
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much, Emily. Firstly, I am not responsible for the name. I've only ever known it as the NCS project. And if anyone asks for the full project name, I'm not sure I know it.
I think that's the case for most people, to be honest. You know, you've made it when you're just an acronym.
Excellent. So, yeah, as you said, we specialise in grain storage and processing equipment for arable farmers. And so we thought that we should get involved in a project which is all about nutrition for livestock farmers. How did we come to the project? We came to the project actually through a piece of equipment, a piece of machinery that a manufacturer we work with said, we see some guys in Denmark using this in quite a novel way, quite an interesting way. They're cooking beans at a really high temperature for not very long, and then they're feeding it instead of soy in organic dairy. And they said, we don't really understand it. Maybe you're interested. And I went across to Denmark with a dairy farmer to see what they were up to. And it was really that interest there. We came back thinking, actually, is there a piece of equipment here? Is there a process here that could be done on farm that can add value to pulse crops for UK arable farmers, or indeed for mixed and livestock farmers as well, to process and displace soy in the ration? And so with that in mind, we kind of eventually crossed paths with Roger Vickers, the project director at the NCS project, and became part of the project.
How exciting. So can you tell us a little bit about the work package that you're working on specifically and the trials that you're conducting?
Yeah, no problem. So we're working with, I'm going to try and remember now, 6 or 7 partners within our work package. And our remit is fairly broad. A couple of the work packages, ourselves and Kelvin Cave, we're working on developing post-harvest pulse processing systems. Ranging from ensiling and whole crop right the way through to taking beans and pulses through to a harvest, and then roasting and decorticating and all these different types of processes we can do. We're trying to understand, how do we get the most bang for a buck out of the bean or out of a pulse through post-harvest processing? But then linked to that, there are as ABN and LC Beef Nutrition, First Milk, who are also running commercial trials with inclusions of beans in livestock diets across different sectors. So including broilers, layers, dairy and beef. And finally, last but not least, is SIUC, who are our academic partner in our group. And what we're doing is an awful lot of research, very, very focused on poultry. And we're looking at how can processed beans, how can we maximize the soya substitution potential in poultry? Because poultry is by far and away the biggest consumer of soy in the UK, probably getting on to 70% of soy that's imported into the UK ends up in poultry, maybe 65%, a little bit less. So that is the big prize. Small reductions in this huge industry actually have really, really meaningful impacts in terms of our carbon footprint.
So how far along are you into these trials now? What year are we in?
Oh, that's a tough question. We've been going a while. We're in the second half.
Okay, that's good.
I've committed to the second half.
So can you tell us anything about what you've observed so far or what you've delivered basically?
Yeah, so I suppose sharing some of our work specifically within the work package with processing. So we've looked at a couple of post-harvest processes. So one is heat treatment, so really high temperature, exposing crops to really high temperature, short duration. What does that do for the crops? One of the things that we found, and this was really what the reason roasting was happening in Denmark, was we found that we're actually able to double the bypass protein in for ruminants. So we're improving the quality of the protein. Now, what we've also the work has shown is that while we've reduced the degradability, we have also maintained a high level of digestibility. So that protein is still available for the cow. But not only have we seen that with the protein, but we've also up to increased by 50% the bypass starch that's available for beans. And this is really, really important because it needs to adjust how we would formulate a roasted bean in a ration from a standard bean to really maximize that metabolizable protein uplift that we're able to get. And so that's kind of a quite specific area that we've been looking at. But then we've been looking at how do we deploy these processed beans or beans more generally in both research environments and commercial. And so, for example, with the research with broilers, we've been able to replace, reduce soy inclusion by 68% and delivering a 40% reduction in the carbon footprint of the feed for the broilers while maintaining performance. And so this is a huge change because at the start of this, everyone's, John, if we're doing 5% inclusion, that would be amazing. 5% is a big number because there's a lot of quantity out there. For us to be looking, running at inclusion levels of up to 30% with a 60% reduction in soy inclusion and those kind of emissions reductions while maintaining performance is really outstanding. There is a small impact on the cost, but this is what we're working at in the second half of the project, understanding the cost benefit. But it points to insetting and reducing those carbon emissions through feed interventions in the supply chain is as economically competitive as offsetting, or maybe even better.
Well, that sounds really exciting. What are you hoping to do with the rest of the time that you have conducting these trials? Is there anything else that's in the works or anything new?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of data collection, and we're slowly moving through the kind of the processing stage. And in January we have the From Soya to Sustainability conference on Wednesday, the 28th of January, and that's going to be kind of a focal point for the next large dissemination of the research work that we've done. But also sharing of the commercial work that we've done. And with the commercial work, what it's been the trials and tribulations and what we have seen in terms of performance of increased homegrown pulse inclusion in livestock sector diets. And that ranges dairy, beef, and into poultry as well. And I think that really kind of casts an interesting light on the whole debate about can this be done? Is it possible?
And I suppose a challenge will always be with anything like this, taking it from the trials and the results to actually getting people to buy into it and put it into practice. Are you confident that you're going to have the results to inspire people to do that?
You never have enough, do you? Like you never
Yeah.
have enough. I was fairly confident that we didn't need any results to inspire people that importing 2.4 million tons of protein halfway around the world with a massive carbon footprint associated with its land use change was a good idea in the first place. But you're right. We're going to have particularly the research that SIUC are completing in the poultry sector. We have really moved understanding forward about what can be done and the impacts of that change, and an understanding as well of the cost of achieving that change. And I think that's the thing that we really need. It's not the could it just nutritionally be done? It's the yes, it can nutritionally be done. We know that. But yes, these are the very significant environmental improvements that we can realize just through the substitution of the soy. But also, once we know what the true cost of that then allows retailers, it then allows policymakers to make decisions about how they choose to value the millions of tons of carbon emissions that can be abated from a switch from imported soy to homegrown pulses.
Because I imagine there are some critics who would say displacing soya entirely or substantially just can't be done. And even though we're doing these trials and we're getting these results, that in the real world maybe we can't make that leap and it's too big a mountain to climb. What would your view be? Do you think in the long term that it is something that's possible?
Yeah, but if you look at the if you look at the economics of the situation as it is today, the guys who said that are absolutely right. And if we choose to not value the reduction in emissions, if we choose to not value the increase in our food security by having a homegrown protein source, if we aren't interested in how pulses can regenerate UK arable rotations and the implications for the soil health and the implications for UK biodiversity, if we aren't interested in any of those things and we don't attach a value to them, the pure economics is going to say that soy, most of the time, would win out over a homegrown protein source. But that relies on ignoring the benefits of all the in all these other areas, and I think that kind of position just isn't tenable if we're going to actually create a more sustainable, better food system.
And to play devil's advocate again, some people might say that feed companies are happy with the situation that we've got at the moment, that they have responsibly sourced soya, and therefore maybe they don't have the motivation to change if they're driven purely by profit and the bottom line. Do you think that there will be enough motivation for them to do something different and take this all on board?
I think that the onus isn't actually on the feed companies to make the change here. They're part of the solution. And in my experience of working with feed companies in this project, they're as innovative and progressive as anyone in the area of taking forward a reduction in emissions and improving the sustainability of the food system. What they have to do is continue to be economically viable every day and doing the very best for their customers who are operating in the kind of prevailing conditions. And so, in my experience, feed companies are ready to respond to that challenge and to that change. And it really depends on retailers, food service, and policymakers to create the environment that makes a reduction in the use of imported soy. And the increased inclusion of homegrown proteins, a logical choice.
There are quite a lot of challenges for farmers and the industry at the moment. I mean, we've just experienced a really bad drought, and I think people have had firsthand kind of sight this summer of climate change, and it's very difficult to deny the impact that that will have. Do you think that this kind of extreme weather and the impact it's having, do you think that is going to help drive people towards making changes and incorporating things like this into their business plan? Are you hopeful that all these things will come together and people will change their viewpoint?
I think the biggest benefit for farmers in thinking about the arable and the production side, the arable production side of things, is inclusion of pulses is going to broaden rotations. It's going to bring in more diversity. And however much you buy into the regenerative agriculture storyline, that diversity and fixing nitrogen in the soil is going to be beneficial. Okay, that the difficulty really is that the pulses that are harvested probably don't really the price doesn't really reflect their true value in many cases, and particularly their true value when you're replacing something like imported soy with a carbon footprint five times that of the a homegrown pulse. It's down to I think policymakers and the market to create the conditions which then make farmers feed companies respond, planting, growing beans, benefiting the soil, benefiting biodiversity, benefiting food security, and that will be turned into feed for our livestock industry.
And what about the kind of time-old criticism of pulses, that they're not predictable and they're not reliable enough year on year for farmers to produce? Do you think that's a stigma that farming is going to have to get over if it wants to overcome this situation? And do you think that the situation with extreme weather and unreliability and trying to create resilience in a business, do you think that many people will actually look at pulses afresh and think, actually, they do have a role to play in my rotation?
Yes, I think they will when others do their part as well. And I think that's the absolute key bit. Pulses in the Republic of Ireland went from 2,000 hectares to 20,000 hectares in 4 years because they introduced a protein aid subsidy, and there's a cap subsidy available for the production of pulses. They now have no problem with the level of production of homegrown proteins in that market. Just that reframing of the value of pulses in the Republic of Ireland has completely changed the levels of production. Yes, there is that volatility. Yes, research and development and projects like this and the work in other work packages goes a long way to helping farmers understand those risks, manage those risks. There's an awful lot that can be done in research. The yields and pulses probably hasn't gone very far in the last 25 years, maybe even longer. But the investment's been extremely limited because it's been a crop that's really on the margins. If policymakers and retailers really embrace this crop and embrace kind of homegrown protein, then I think what you'll see is that they'll set a chain of events in place that sees kind of a lot of these reliability issues addressed over time. They won't be eliminated, but they will be tackled.
And you mentioned it before, but I'll just circle back around to it. The Soya and Sustainability Conference is happening again next year on the 28th of January in Peterborough. You were a speaker last year. I remember it well. can you tell us a bit about what the conference is like and why people should consider attending?
Yeah, absolutely. The conference, we're into our second year now, and we were absolutely delighted with the traction we got in year one. And it was really fantastic to see so many delegates there, over and above our expectations. And it really brought this broad spectrum right away from retailers right away through to farmers. One of the things I will say about farmers is, despite all these headwinds and challenges that they face, that their willingness to innovate despite those things and actually to do what they feel is right is absolutely fantastic. So it's great. The conference, it brought together that full kind of range of people, and it needs the entire supply chain to pull in the same direction to make that change. So speak to people at different positions, and it's always, well, we would, and we say, no, it's great, but they won't do this. And then you speak to the next party and, well, yeah, we really want to do it, but they won't do that. And actually, if everybody starts to understand that there is an awful lot of consensus around UK-grown pulses as a solution to many of the challenges that we face in agriculture, I think we'll make progress really quickly. And that example of Ireland in terms of pulse area that was produced, it's just an example of how quickly change can come when decisions are made that enable it to happen.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's all my questions for today. Thank you so much for joining us and for your time.
No worries.
And we will look forward to seeing you on the 28th of January next year.
Thanks very much.
So that's all for today. Thank you, John, for joining us, and thank you to everyone listening at home. Make sure you keep up to date with the podcast by subscribing on whatever podcast streaming service you use, and we will see you soon.